Hello and welcome back to another edition of And the Winner Is, where we trawl back through the previous Oscar winners for Best Picture. Tonight we're looking at the 1973 winner, 1972's The Godfather, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, starring Marlon Brando, Al Pacino, James Caan, and Diane Keaton. Joining me as always is Paul. All right, mate?
Yep, all good. Ready to talk some mafia.
Yeah, and talking backwards.
Yep.
The way that we do these randomly, the sequel came out a couple of years back now, wasn't it?
Well, it was right back at the beginning. I've got the list here in front of me as I keep it so I can write down what films we've got next. It was literally on our second month.
Wow.
So we did Go My Way and Slumdog Millionaire the first time around, and then the second month, Godfather Part 2.
Wow. It's been a while, yeah, so... So it's strange to get kind of revisiting this franchise. I think we're into different podcasts now.
it's the only one that we have to talk about like this.
It's this and Rocky, isn't it? I think.
So, yeah. So
So as normal, just a few little bit nuggets about the film. The budget for this apparently was between I think 6 and 7.2 million. You have any idea of the box office?
I would imagine it's going to be fairly large. I reckon I'm going to go for about 40 million.
Well, from the facts I located, its box office was between 250 and 290 mil.
Jesus, no wonder they made two more.
Yeah, I think the book had done quite well, hadn't it, as well? So it was probably on the back, a lot of audience recognition. As usual, this is still in the era of five nominees for Best Picture. So that year it was up against Cabaret, Deliverance, The Emigrants, and Sangster. The latter two I've never heard of, but I've seen Deliverance, and I've seen bits and pieces of Cabaret. I do need to watch that film in full one these days. In fact, Cabaret is going to be the first sort of fact to delve into. Because apparently Cabaret has the record for the most wins at the Oscars without nabbing the Best Picture.
Wow, sir.
Yeah, because you've got a few of the others, including Best Director. And one or two of the craft and technicals and stuff. So it felt like one of those where they kind of, you know what, we didn't give him Best Picture, we better give it Bob Fosse, the director's long award. I can see that wasn't other those three top three two films. I certainly they're decent films. I think Deliverance is a really good film, but was never going to win against The Godfather. And interestingly, also alongside that, so it was nominated for 10 and only won three. The Godfather, which is incredible, really.
Yeah.
And this is also, I think, was the year when Brando was a no-show for his Best Actor award.
Yeah.
He was very much an enigma, wasn't he, Brando?
Yeah, and he even is in the film, because obviously it's about The Godfather. Yeah. For the bulk of this film, he's not in it.
Yeah. But when he is in it, he still makes it about him in the scenes, because amongst the facts, I find apparently there's an early shot in the scene where Vito's carried and returns home, and they carry him up the stairs. Apparently Brando put weights under his body on the bed as a prank to make it harder to lift him.
I love the fact that he never learned his lines.
I saw he used the cue cards. That's very Saturday Night Live, isn't it?
And he did the same. He did the same in Superman.
Yes. Yeah. Apparently, he wanted to make Don Corleone look like a bulldog, so he stuffed his cheeks with cotton wool for the audition, which is everybody does for their impressions of him. Right? When it actually came around to film, when he wore a mouthpiece, it was made by a dentist, and apparently, it can be seen in the American Museum of the Moving Image in Queens, in New York. The cat that Brando had in the opening scene was a stray that Coppola found on the lot at Paramount. It wasn't originally in the script. But the cat was so happy, his purring blocked out a lot of Brando's dialogue, and he had to loop most of his lines in that sequence.
Betty loved that.
Yeah. And the other one that I was interested, I thought, the bit where James Caan's character confronts the cameraman. I think it was at the wedding, wasn't it? And he throws his camera on the ground. The actor in that, his reaction is genuine, because apparently that was improvised by James Caan. The guy didn't know he was going to do it. And Caan also came up with the idea of throwing the money at the bloke to make up for breaking it. Apparently he said at the time, where he came from, if you broke something, you replaced it or repaid the owner. And it's actually a really powerful little scene. This rips out of his hand, destroys him, and just tosses him a couple of notes. Cheap bastard. But yeah, this, I could go on and on. There's a lot about this film. Just and the scene where Sonny beats up Carlo, which Connie's husband, took 4 days to shoot and used more than 700 extras. And Caan was ad lib improvising himself as well when he used the garbage can. He was man unpossessed on this set one.
Yeah.
He was just improvising like he's going out of fashion. Yeah, man. Right, so I suppose we should sort of dive into the film itself a bit now and some of our early thoughts on it.
Yeah.
My first thought was in these opening parts of the film was that's a one big ass wedding at the start.
Yeah, it's also very ominous, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of extravagance and fear and tension.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes it all seem happiness and light at the wedding, but it's clearly not a great time for the Corleone family.
No. I do like that idea, though, that sort of, on the day of his wedding, he's even going to ask him for a favour of his daughter's wedding. But he's not obliged to sort of say yes to them, is he, to all of them, it seems?
No.
No, the insinuation is that he will, but... Because I think he turns down the first guy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's the one with his daughter, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's very sort of moody sequence as well, which was the other fact I noticed with the mood choice for the cinematographer was very deliberate. And they did try it. Paramount weren't overly impressed, but I thought it actually works for the film. It gives those moments, particularly like early on, a little bit of a menace to them, shooting the morning in the gloom.
It is a specific look, isn't it? That I kind of think has since kind of continued in those type of gangster films. You can still see it in the likes of The Sopranos and things like that. Yeah.
Half light and shadow and sort of, which is almost a little bit on the nose almost that these guys live in the shadows a bit, don't they? So I suppose that's a consistent choice, I suppose. The other thing I forgot about this wedding sequence, that's a big cake.
Yeah.
The last time we saw that big was on one of our other podcasts.
Oh, good old American pie.
And the other thing I like about this opening sequence is this character, Johnny Fontaine. He was clearly not based on... any mobster showbiz friends from the 50s that we might have mentioned in a previous podcast in the other record we've not long done.
Yeah.
So I do like that sort of that touches on it, and we see it later on in the film actually. That sort of thing that there of showbiz and the criminal underworld have often gone sort of hand in hand, haven't they? A little bit like that.
Yeah, very much. Obviously, there was the Memphis Mafia.
Yeah.
Then obviously there was the Mafia in Vegas.
Yeah.
That featured someone that we talked about on the last episode. Or Blue Eyes was a member of that.
Yeah, he's a big. So he used to have a few friends in that sort of circle, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes. Something else that sort of did amuse me as the film plays out, we see sort of the stuff with Michael, who he's actually got quite a tragic story as the film plays out, I think. I love yeah. there's a scene where Michael starts when they're first dating, and they go to see the Bells of St. Mary's, which is kind of like a sort of like an inward loop of this podcast.
Yeah.
With that being the sequel, wasn't it, to Going My Way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bit amusing to see that.
Yeah.
We've got a bit meta. there's just so many little bits and pieces peppered out of this film that I'd forgotten, because it's been a couple of years since I watched it in full. Obviously that sequence in LA with the horse is just brutal.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we get to this point, and I find it really strange that in essence this is always thought of kind of as a New York film.
Yeah.
But we spend quite a bulk of time either in LA or in Italy.
And also briefly in Vegas as well. So
yeah.
In the film.
Yeah. So it's very, very different to what it's kind of thought of as.
Yeah. But that stuff with the horse is just, oh man, it's just an iconic sequence to sort of, from the minute that the producer refuses, just, I haven't seen the film myself, mate, that was not the wisest decision you've ever made.
No. And you don't know what's coming.
No, the reveal is really good.
Yeah, because he wakes up and you kind of think, what's on him? And then as you get closer, you can kind of see that it's blood. And you think, oh, is he dead?
Yeah, and the other thing you think is, have they set him up? Is he going to be finding a dead woman in his bed or something?
Yeah, and then when he starts moving, that's exactly what you think. Because he starts moving and lifting the bed covers up and you can see the blood on the bed. Yeah. And you think, oh, they've set him up. And then as he gets up and looks at what's on the bed, it's like, oh... I don't know what's worse, whether it's a dead person or a horse's head.
Yeah, but it's such a brilliant sequence, and
there really are some gruesome deaths in this as well. On top of that,
yeah,
like for a lot of it, there isn't a lot of violence. It's a lot of off-screen stuff. But when they go for it, they truly go for it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Sonny's death in the toll booth is brutal. And somebody mentioned wonderfully lampooned in The Simpsons in an episode with James Caan playing himself as well.
Yeah.
Where he pulls up a toll booth and he says, I hate these things.
Yeah. And it's really sad. It was one of my notes that hardly any of this cast are alive. Now, considering it's... And obviously... Adrian is still alive as well. But outside of that, there's not many of them left. And considering it's only, I know, only 50 years, but that doesn't seem a long time for most of the cast to be gone.
Yeah. And it's funny you should mention Tyler Sher, because watching this, and this being a sort of, like 3 or 4 years before Rocky, is just how good they did making her look so dowdy in Rocky, because she's absolutely gorgeous when you first see her in this film.
Yeah.
And throughout the film as well.
So very different to Adrian as well.
Yeah. And then compared to when you see her in that opening sequence in scene in Rocky of hers. And you think, is that the same actress? She sort of looks
really...
She's a very, very attractive woman in this film. I mean, bloody hell, this... That's the power of a pair of pointy glasses and a woolly hat and bad hair.
Yeah.
Actually, her story character's arc is really shitty for a character in this film.
And it kind of comes out of left field, doesn't it? That she has this breakdown.
And she has an abusive husband, you know, who sort of turns out.
Yeah, and it's really difficult to watch. That scene, probably the most difficult scene in the film to watch.
And not once, but twice.
Yeah.
We see him sort of launch attacks into her. Particularly from when the film was started. You think, all right then. And then he turns out to be a complete twat, and he actually sets up his brother-in-law as well in the midst of it. Yeah, for about family, there's a lot of internal positioning, isn't there, and squabbling in this film.
Yeah.
And the second one, are back to the fate of Fredo and stuff like that. And also, sort of, I liked a lot of the double standards.
Yeah.
Within them, in the family.
Yeah. It always kind of just boils under the surface, doesn't it? It never kind of really explodes. There's always a lot of talk about, oh, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it kind of never goes that one step further.
Which I think is why when we do get the violence, that's what catches you out. It's similarly in Sicily, where Michael's been a bit of a tool. He sort of left the one behind. Now he's chasing another one already. And that marriage to her just ends brutally and so suddenly.
Yeah.
With that car bomb, you just don't see that whole sequence coming the first time around.
No. What I will say on the note of it becoming Pacino's film, I do find his performance is quite one note at times. It spends a lot of the time him moaning about stuff. Yeah. And never really actually taking control of it.
Yeah, and Michael's a little bit dull, isn't he, at the start?
Yeah.
Before he really gets involved in the family.
Yeah, his performance is better in the second one.
Mm. Yes.
I think the character becomes more rounded as he's allowed to breathe, because it kind of, as we said, it's kind of Brando's film.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not up against Brando. He's carrying the weight of the film more in the second film and is up to the job, where he's sort of a little bit in Brando's shadow. That's a hard way to put it, but because he's playing kind of second fiddle, you feel it in some ways.
Yeah, but it doesn't allow him kind of expand the role.
Mm.
Because he's kind of always going back to his father.
Yeah.
And once his father's gone with the second one, it's kind of like he has control of everything.
Yeah. I think it's Khan who gets a lot of the joy out of this film in terms of stuff.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that's probably where his career really came from, was his role in this.
Yeah.
And again, sad, obviously, he only passed away not long ago.
Yes.
And I've enjoyed him in things. Most people will hate me for saying this, but one of my favourite films is Gone in 60 Seconds. And his cameos in that are superb. Oh,
okay. He's in it.
Yeah, well, because his son's in it, isn't he? Scott's in it as one of the main cast members. And so James comes in and kind of does a couple of little cameos in it.
Mm.
And I absolutely love him in that.
Yeah. So some of the narrative, there's some interesting little bits sort of when you watch the film through now eyes and eyes of the last few years, when they're talking about not wanting to get involved with drugs and stuff like that as a family, and how key that ends up becoming for mob law and the Yakuza and all these different places across the globe, how drugs has very much driven a lot of these family businesses over the years. So it was interesting to see them talking about that in that 1940s setting. And we all know how well that turned out. going back to the explosion of violence, the whole sequence at the end where Michael sets himself up basically as the sole man. Take out all those rivals in one night. It's just, again, that's really brutal as well. And they're all kind of just doing innocent things at the time, really. End up with a bullet in the brain. Mo Green one, I think, is the worst, where I think he's getting a massage.
Yeah.
And then just sends a bullet through his glasses. It's brutal.
say, that when the violence does come, it comes full force.
But you watch the film and you know what's coming, and you see these characters sort of standing up to that family and think, oh, if only you knew what I knew as a viewer, if I haven't seen this film before, was coming.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be doing that. Because that sequence in Vegas in Mo Green is great as well. Where he
really
got the upper hand and he's not selling his casino. And then we get Michael telling Fredo never to sort of start side against the family again. Again, just kind of setting up his fate in the second film. And Fredo's a really tragic character both across those both films, I think. Being like the older brother, but he just doesn't really fit. And that's the irony, that Michael is a better fit to become a leader in a mob family than he is. I really enjoy watching this again. You can tell it's such a rich film. There's so many bits to pick, like a pick out. Interesting, and we talk about the explosion points, and yet you go to the other extreme, and actual Don Vito's death, it's really sort of calm and soulful, and probably one, ironically, the saddest moments in the film. 1 minute he's there playing with his grandson, pretending to be a monster running through the orange grove, and the next thing he's conked it.
It's very sudden, isn't it? It's not what you're expecting. You kind of feel like, oh, he's been ill, he's kind of retired, and this is his life now. Yes. And this is how we're going to end it, with him having come through everything that he's been through. And kind of, that's it. He's kind of found where he belongs. And then all of a sudden, it takes a completely different turn.
Yeah. And she's grandson's still playing around for a little while. And then just runs off silently to the house.
Yeah.
It's a shocking moment, but not shocking in the same way as the other ones in the film.
It's more of a kind of silent moment, isn't it? You just kind of go, so there was no happy ending for him.
And the weird thing, because I watched this on Blu-rays, that's basically him lying there in that grove, is basically the menu screen, which is utterly bizarre.
That's weird. I hadn't even noticed that.
Yeah, it's him laying on the floor is the menu screen. This is one that I could probably talk about for hours on end, but I think we've covered a lot of the main points. Oh, something else I did just jot in passing. There was like a load of papers and stuff flashing up. At one point, I see the Daily Mirror header come up on one of these newspapers. How do they get in there?
Very strange. It's just some moments, isn't it, that you just don't understand.
Yeah. Was there any little bits that stood out for you in the film?
Yeah, I completely forgotten that Diane Keaton was in it.
Yeah.
It took me a while to twig that it was her. And she puts in a really good performance.
Yes, yeah.
For what is one of her early roles, so I can only imagine.
And almost a thankless role in ways, because she doesn't have a lot to do. Other than come in, wring her hands occasionally. In worry and fret, and then get told at the end, never ask about the business. And again, that scene at the end where she's making the drink, she does so well in that quietness.
Yeah.
She's making a drink and the door just shuts and the film ends.
I had completely forgotten that there was a musical number. I know you talked about the Hollywood stuff earlier on, but we do get the musical number at the wedding, which was just feels so left field. Again, both these films that we've watched this month, there's some really awful fight choreography in this one. The scene in the New York street, kind of on the steps, where he's clearly not hitting him, and it's shot so badly that you can see the gap between his fist and the guy's face.
Is this Johnny we're talking about now? Where are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the husband. Yeah, the first time. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Just looks bad.
The dustbin lady sells really well. I actually winced and watched that.
Yeah, and it was all down to the choreography and the camera angles and everything. It just wasn't done right.
Well, it's shot at a distance as well, isn't it? Slightly.
Yeah.
Never feels in your face enough.
No, and it's never at the right angle, which is why you can see how he's hitting him or not hitting him in this case. And alongside that, there was some over the top acting. I kind of likened it to Dick Tracy at times. I don't even want to say it was continuous. It was kind of certain scenes. Some of the scenes of Don in his office.
Yeah.
Did kind of feel moustache twiddling at times. And a little cliched. And I think that's more to do with the fact that how things are now, that a lot of things kind of try to replicate The Godfather.
Yeah. And the thing as well with most of the stuff Brando was in after this, he became a caricature of himself, and it kind of almost started with this performance in this film.
Yeah.
Good though he is in it.
Yeah, and the whole mouth thing seemed to get worse as the film went on. Like, he felt like he was not just with the appliance on his face, but he felt like he was sticking his jaw out, and it got worse as the film went on.
Mm.
Like, it looks great at the start, but then as the film went further on, he looked more and more like a bulldog.
and the harder and harder to understand as well. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of where it's kind of become a piss take.
Yeah.
As it's gone on, more people do impressions of him doing that, and it kind of does just feel a little bit cliched. And the other thing is, right from the beginning, once the wedding got in full flow, the film is so downbeat. There's not any light moments throughout the whole film.
It's just hit
after hit after hit, and it's not a bad thing. But most films,
you've seen Christmas with the fine presents in the street.
Yeah, but outside of that, there's really not a lot of lightness to this film at all. It can be, though weirdly I did watch it all in one go, which doesn't happen very often. Normally I have to take a break. So I actually did get through this all in one sitting.
Yeah.
And that's always a plus point if I can get through it. But as I say, it's really quite depressing to watch it. Which I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's like, I'll say it now, it's got a higher score than the last film we reviewed.
Mm.
That's for sure. It's not a knock. It just sometimes it felt like it for again a 3-hour film.
Yeah.
At times it could have done with a little bit of a pick me up at times.
Yeah. 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 So do you want to sort of move into our thoughts overall then, and then your score?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really solid film.
Yeah.
There's no way around that. It never loses its quality. Sometimes because of that darkness, it may lose my attention a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it feels like it's at the same level throughout the whole film. I think some of the performances, like we say, James Caan is brilliant.
Yeah.
I think it's directed fantastically. I think we can all say that Francis Ford Coppola never really did anything else after this. He never had another massive hit, did he?
Well, creatively, I'd have said Apocalypse Now, but I mean, it didn't do great box office, I don't think. But creatively, I think it's a great piece.
And I think that film really killed his career. I think this is him at probably his most creative.
Well, these two films, the weird thing about doing these two separately is that they almost feel like one film, which was split in two, even though they're like made two years apart, or at least 2 years apart.
And it has some moments which are truly bad. As I say, that fight scene is just dreadful, and Brando is moustache twirling at his best. certainly when he when he makes his comeback. He really is. But then again, we see a completely different side of him at the end of the film. As I said, Pacino, I think, puts in a better performance in the second one. Michael's a bit of a wet blanket at times throughout this film. But other things, as I said, the makeup is exquisite. And then it's just made worse by him aping it the further we went into the film. But again, I thought the whole thing is very much known as a New York film, but it spans a wide variety of scenes in different places, which I think works really well. Probably the stuff in Italy is the lightest bit of the film.
Yes, yeah. And even that ends up in a dark place.
Yeah, but it's very, very much seeing a different side of Michael.
Yeah.
That for a lot of it, he kind of seems like he's happy.
Yeah.
And has got away from it. So that sequence I really like. And I really do think the death scene at the end is superb. It really catches you off guard.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, that's my thoughts. It's a deserved winner on my part.
I agree with that.
And really enjoyed it. I think because we watched both of them the first time around when we did part two.
Yes, I did watch it first. Yeah.
So
it just made more sense to watch this, even though we weren't reviewing it.
Yeah, and this second time around, I think I've allowed it to kind of stew.
Yeah.
Because it was a second watch and it kind of allowed me to dive a bit deeper into it and maybe connect with it a bit more than maybe I did the first time we watched it.
I'll get your score in a minute. For me again, it's a classy picture. It's a classic picture, even, and I think it's Coppola being really good. It's got Brando. I can see why they gave him the Oscar, even though I don't think it's his best stuff. I think he's better in stuff like on the Waterfront than some of his earlier stuff. Khan is superb in it. I like Robert Duvall's turn in it as well as Tom Hagen. We forgot to mention. I'd agree that Pacino is sort of overpowered and overshadowed a little bit in this. He does come to his fore more in the second one. The women aren't given a lot to do, but they do all right what they're given. The score is really good. Though apparently that was one of the things it wasn't up for at the Oscars because of some weird sort of, belief that it was the composer's score was similar to a previous one. So it's very strange that he didn't get a nomination for that. And I say some good acting in it, great cinematography, great lighting, good editing. One of the more superior winners that we've done so far, I think. If we were to sit down and rank them all, I think this would probably be near, maybe in the top five of both of our lists, perhaps somewhere near. Because it is a really good piece of cinema. And that reflects in my score, and I'm going to land this at maybe it's a 91, something like that.
Yeah, I'm a little bit lower than that. I'm kind of mid 80s, so I'm going to go about 86, I think.
That's good, decent.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. As I say, it does lose my attention a little bit, mainly due to how dark it is. And that's probably the only reason why I would knock it down for the most part. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think it is sealed off by that death that you just don't expect.
Yeah. For all the brutal ones, the quiet one is one of the most shocking ones.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I suppose that just leaves us to have a look at what the next two will be. So for that, over to yourself.
Yeah, so I will set it going. And we have got 1936.
Ooh, I'm not even sure what that is.
That is Mutiny on the Bounty.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's weird, because Brando was in the remake, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And then for our second one, oh, we've got a fairly new one, 2018.
Was that the one shape with the watery fish thing? What's he called?
Yeah, the Shape of Water.
That's the one. That's a terrible way for me to call it, the Shape. Yeah.
So we've got another visionary director for that one.
Cool. I've not seen that. I've heard of watching that. That's interesting.
Well, interestingly, it was one of the ones that when I was saying that we were doing these, the wife turned around and said, "Oh, I saw that one. I've not seen it." So I'm looking forward to it. And I normally like Del Toro stuff.
Yeah. And I don't think I've seen. Oh, I may have seen that version of Bounty once. That's the Charles Laughton version, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe once in the past as a kid. So that's going to be an interesting couple of watches for the next one.
Yeah, very much so. Cool. I'm looking forward to it. Two films that I've not seen, but like you, I think I'm sure I've seen the remake.
Yeah.
So yeah, very interesting.
Cool. Cheers, mate. On that note, that just leaves it for me to say thank you, and thank you to the listeners, and we will catch you on the next episode.